Hi, hello, and welcome. This is the Zonecast, where we interview emerging Canadian professionals, entrepreneurs, and academics. And today we have with us on the show Balaji Gopalan. He is the founder and CEO of MedStack. Hi, Balaji. How are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing very well. Thanks very much. Good to be here.
Perfect. So I'm definitely interested in this particular interview and learning more about you and also about MedStack. Let's start by talking about your background. Can you tell us about your professional and personal background?
Sure, yeah. So I guess I've been around the block a couple of times. I have a history of working for some big-name Canadian companies, hopefully trying to create one myself. I didn't start my career in software. I actually started my career in aviation. That was sort of my first love. So I did mechanical engineering here in Toronto, and I worked for a big Canadian institution, Bombardier Aerospace, for about 8 years, which is really fun. I got to work on some really cool things. And then, you know, I planned to be an engineer, but then as I got into the industry, I became much more interested in the topic of managing information and people and resources. So I took on a project management type role. Moved into a management position, and then had thought about kind of where things were after a few years. Aviation, the industry as a whole, took a bit of a turn to the quiet after the unfortunate events in September 2001. And so I thought it was a good time to take a bit of a break and rethink things. So I went to business school with the intention actually of going back to my job because I really liked what I did. Went back to my hometown of Kingston, went to Queen's University, did my MBA there, and learned a lot about myself and about the world around me, and became really fascinated by the notion of product as a tool for marketing. Strategic marketing, if you will. And wanted to apply that in a different field. And so on a lark, I applied to a little company that wasn't that well known to too many people west of Toronto. Went there for an interview, got lost in the Niagara Escarpment on the way, but made it there on time, and interviewed for an entry-level product management position at the company that at the time was known as Research in Motion. And this is 2004, so the smartphone industry and the mobile communications industry was very different than it is now. BlackBerry, or as they were known at the time, RIM, had about 100,000 subscribers around the world, didn't have any commercial presence in Europe or really anywhere outside of North America, and was really just a tool purchased by IT departments. But there was the thought that this business could turn into something bigger, and so they had an experiment inside the company to take their product and sell it directly to consumers. And they did this in a very sort of quiet, under the covers experimental way, and that's the team that I joined. So it was like joining a startup inside a startup. Or inside a growing company, as it were. And of course, the rest is history. The company went north of 20,000 people. I ran the consumer services product management team there. And I guess the claim to fame, which is just a really fun story to tell, which is why I was come back to it, is there was a little experimental product that I had the responsibility of building a strategy around and taking to market. We didn't know what it was going to do to the industry, but it became a phenom on its own, which is called BlackBerry Messenger. So BBM was my product, and that's a whole kind of set of stories I can tell on that on its own. But I through this process, I became actually really interested in the idea of companies collaborating and sharing technology with each other to solve bigger and harder problems using their very diverse resources. And the way this originally took form was partnerships with internet companies who were trying to figure out mobile because they didn't really understand it. Mobile at the time was stuff that, was text messaging and packaged content that the wireless carriers would allow you to have. And there was no notion of a mobile internet, really. So talking to Yahoo and Facebook and eBay and Ticketmaster and Skype and companies like that trying to figure out mobile was sort of my job. And that made me really interested in the notion of what does a larger ecosystem look like? In other words, what does a developer platform look like in this space? Because at the time, the realm of developers was really just very enterprising. And then if you had enterprising and video games, it was really nothing in between. So I did more kind of platform stuff and then left the company a while later. And I became sort of this product strategist in the area of platforms. That became my main focus. And I built platform strategies at a number of different companies, education technology, marketing technology, digital security. But I always knew that it had a larger play. And how can a platform as a multiplier change the trajectory of an industry? I'm sure we'll get more into it. But then I met my an entrepreneur, an innovator, and he gave me my answer, which was the industry that was sorely lacking in technology innovation, that also desperately needed it, and the world needed them to succeed, is healthcare. And so that's where the notion of a developer platform for healthcare came from, and was the birth of MedStack in 2014.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, you mentioned you worked in aviation. What did you do in aviation?
What did I do in aviation? Yeah. Well, I mean, I just wanted to be around airplanes. I loved them since I was a kid, and I was very fascinated by both by the notion of a human doing something that they weren't sort of naturally inclined to do, which is fly, but also what it does, the industry does, for sort of connecting people and helping people live better lives with their friends and family. But my career inside Bombardier took a really interesting turn. So I joined the company initially to work on sort of their classical Toronto product, which is the turboprop, the Dash 8. And it was a product that, you know, it was a legacy product in sustaining. There really wasn't much to do. So I was doing some shop floor support. But then meanwhile, sort of in my entire career, I think is governed by opportune timing. So I can't really say it was necessarily skill as much as luck. But there was something else going on inside the company. So, I mean, Bombardier as a company got into aviation. As you may know, the origins of the company was they invented the snowmobile. But they got into aviation through acquisitions. And so they acquired de Havilland, which was a company that was an offshoot of a British company from the Second World War, and Canadair in Montreal, and Shorts Brothers in Ireland, and Learjet. Of course, we all know who Learjet is in Kansas. They made a bid for a new project, and this was going to be the next generation flagship product of their private business jet product line. But the really interesting thing about this product had three firsts. First of all, it was the biggest product ever in that portfolio. Second was, it was the first partner product. So very much like Airbus, they would have different companies that would own different parts of the design, and then they would assemble it into one product. Something the whole aerospace industry was moving towards. So what's really cool about this is that this was a platform, but done not in software, but in manufacturing. And the last thing was, it was going to be the first jet built in Toronto. And because of a massive story behind the covers, and not a lot of people know about, between Bombardier Aerospace and the Canadian Auto Workers Union, that had them win the contract to build a plane in Toronto, backed by the City of Toronto and a number of other things. So they moved me out to that project to coordinate activities on the shop floor from the perspective of changes made to the aircraft that have to catch up to the manufacturing line. How do we make sure those changes are in place? And it was really all around the organization of work for compliance requirements, namely Transport Canada and the FAA. How do you make sure you know what's in the plane specifically, because this stuff is very, very heavily controlled. Again, a foreshadowing for work I would do later on in legislative compliance, which is what I do in MedStack right now, except it's health data privacy. So I was, the best days I had in that job was literally running around on the shop floor in North Toronto, buried inside the guts of a half-built airplane, looking at part numbers. It was really, really fun. And this was a crazy product, because I went from that to being in charge of the change board. So I was the deputy program manager of the product. And this was the manufacturing equivalent of product management. So anybody who wanted to make changes to the engineering definition of the product would have to go through my team to do a business case and schedule it with the engineering resources and actually allocate them resources to build it. But it was a really nutty industry, because you're talking about at the time, so this is, you know, what year was this? This is 2000, early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, $47 million before the interior gets put in. So the entire finished product was something on the order of like 60, 70 million, sorry, pardon me. And so the global market TAM for a product like that is a few hundred people. product that really can be afforded only by a few hundred people. And yeah, we had some really awesome war stories to tell. Steven Spielberg, Michael Dell, Tommy Hilfiger. At the time, they were 20-something, the two owners of Oakley sunglasses, as well as corporations, TI, Home Depot, you know, Pitney Bowes, Hewlett Packard. And when you're dealing with a market like that, the whole notion of customer success and customer satisfaction takes on an entirely different framework. So I learned a lot of things that would then play into my whole notion of customers versus product versus ecosystem and how you balance the tensions between the three in a natural, progressive manner. Whether those customers were people buying an airplane, whether those customers were a cell phone carrier buying a new product, or whether those customers are a university buying a platform, or a software developer trying to build a product for healthcare and bring it to market. It's really the same philosophy across all of it. And so I have the benefit of having had a very diverse career, but actually pulling lessons from all of it across the board in everything that I've done.
Wow, that's quite a fascinating work experience you have. So now I want to talk about MedStack. So Sure. You founded this in 2014. Mm-hmm. Tell us, what is MedStack and how did the idea come about?
So MedStack, at its core, is a developer platform for healthcare applications. So the fundamental problem we're solving, and let's take it even a step sort of removed from our product, is the healthcare industry has never seen a crisis like it's seeing right now. It's shocking, mind-blowing, and quite frightening. The entire industry has been based around this notion of in-person, on-premise, on-paper, real-time care. You come to a healthcare professional and they use their resources to deliver care in that moment. That's fine if you're talking about conditions that exist and can be treated in that moment and then don't exist anymore. But the human health condition has evolved beyond that. And we're now in a world where the majority of costs on the healthcare system are from really two areas. The first is an aging population. And so complexities that come about because people are living longer lives and want to be active longer in their lives. And of course, this is very personal for me because my aging parents live with me and I take care of them. Well, I should take care of them. They take care of me, really, to their credit. And then the other one is chronic disease. So, you know, cancer, heart conditions, mental health, diabetes, really those four. They're complicated. They manifest in intersecting multiple manifesting symptoms, and they propagate over a long period of time. And so the best way to deliver care to the patient is with a longer term relationship. And so, you know, people who work very hard in the healthcare industry are all trying to find ways to do this, but they don't really have the tools in place. The first thought was, well, okay, we need to digitize healthcare. And we need to digitize healthcare for a couple of reasons. First is that maybe we need to have more people involved in the healthcare system delivering care to a patient. And so you need to have data that becomes fluid as the person goes from one person to another. So think of it, doctors referring to specialists. But the second is we're still learning about some of this stuff. Like the whole human condition is suffering from these things we don't even completely understand. And that's not a decry against people who work in this industry. This stuff is hard. And so being able to access and analyze more data becomes more important so that we can better predict and better manage how we deliver care to people on this industry that is an increasing percentage of our GDP every single year. Okay, that's fine. So then what does that have to do with MedStack? Well, we believe the answer to addressing this capacity constraint is the cloud. What does the cloud allow you to do? Well, the cloud allows you to deliver care anywhere. So the simple example is telemedicine, right? So if you have a cloud connection, now you can do video consults, you can even do robotic surgery, you can do remote analysis of radiology reports. There's all sorts of things you can do. The second is that you can make decisions faster, and you make decisions faster through the magic of AI. If you have a large data set, this is a handful of things that, while multivariate, are still a handful of things across the human population. So we have a lot more data upon which we can do analysis and find two patients who look the same, which is, to their credit, what doctors have been doing forever, but now we're operationalizing it in a faster manner to help draw conclusions based on things that have happened before. And the last thing you can do is you can just make the workflow work better. This is almost a user experience improvement for patients and for providers alike. Move past the fax machines, move past the pagers to have data flow more digitally, more real-time, more fluidly. And I think we had some of the wonderful things our customers are doing in this space to you know, even outside of patients, to make the people who work in healthcare their lives better is really important. So all this becomes really, really interesting. Then the last question is, who's going to do it? And every industry who's gone through a technology transformation. And if you look at my experience, I've been through a bunch of different industries, from enterprise communications to education to digital marketing to, you know, security and manufacturing and a bunch of other things. They've always come up with this catalyst, which is a central data store of information surrounded by a supported ecosystem of point solutions. And that exists everywhere except in healthcare. There is no developer ecosystem in healthcare. And part of the problem is because when they first realized some 20 years ago that they needed digitization in healthcare, you had five or six very enterprising, innovative companies step forward and say, we'll solve this problem. But they kind of misled people, maybe inadvertently, by saying, we'll solve it and we'll do it all. Mm-hmm. It's not really their fault. I mean, I think we saw this, even Oracle at one point kind of thought it could do everything, and then they realized that it can't. That's not the place they should be. So we have these massive deployments of electronic health record systems that are trying to build a series of apps internally on top of their existing platform. But here's the rub. Physician satisfaction in the quality of patient care since the advent of the EMR has gone down, not up. They actually don't like using them. They find them very frustrating. And I don't mean to beat up on them, because it's a hard problem to solve. But if you look at a hospital and you look at the difference between an oncology clinic and a radiology lab and fracture clinic and, you know, what have you, they may as well be different companies. The processes are so different. The user experience is so different. User experience matters so much in healthcare because you want to provide good experience to your patients, right? And so having one company say that it can do it all becomes a bit challenging. So that's the problem that we realize need is solving. That's how we bring platforms to healthcare. Is there's a collection of people out there who are of enterprising minds. Your show is about celebrating entrepreneurship. That's what this conversation is about. Because of a personal story. Entrepreneurship is hard. It's the easiest, simplest path is to go get a 9-to-5 job, right? Pay your bills.
Go home.
Go for lunch, you know.
Yeah.
Sit in a couple of meetings. You have a support network around you. And I want to caveat that, because I don't mean to diverge too much, but this is worth saying. I'm not one of those people who believes that innovation can only happen at small companies. And I say that because I worked for a very big company that was incredibly innovative at one point. And I also worked for a really tiny startup that was horribly uninnovative. So they're both possible. It really depends on attitude. But with a larger company, you have legacy. You have legacy that you have to support. And it's harder. Well, if you build the right way, it is possible to innovate. It's harder to take as many bold risks. Not because you don't want to, but simply because it's hard. And so I think people who go into entrepreneurship go into it because they fundamentally believe that there's something that should be better. And the only way to fix it is to create something new. In healthcare, all of these amazing digital health startups, and we have so many right here in Canada, I love the stuff that we see being built here, are all driven by personal stories, either because they were patients or because they're healthcare workers themselves, or they have a relative who works in healthcare and they're like, this industry has to work differently, has to work better. And you just hear a different tone of voice than you do in like circles of e-commerce or video games or what have you, or even, you know, enterprise workflows. In healthcare, people just, there's a sense of urgency around the fact that we've been living with this gap for so long, and it's got to work differently because, hey, you know, we're all going to get older and we all might get sick, and we feel, in Canada, we have also a personal attachment to this because we have a public healthcare system that we pay for with our tax dollars. And it drives us crazy when we look at, University Avenue in Toronto, and we think about all the inefficiencies that exist in there. Again, not because anybody wants them to be there. It's just the simple nature of the beast. And so it's got to work differently. People have to think about it differently. What breaks my heart is when I meet somebody like that. There's one of our customers, a Toronto company that we were huge fans of, called Medicine. Their CEO talks a lot about why he created their company. It's because he was a patient. And he's like, it's not that people worked around me didn't do a good job. It's just this whole system doesn't work the way that it should. And it's not as patient-centric as it should. And why isn't there a better way to do it? Why can't I just care at home? And he's created a company just to help them make that happen. When you meet people like that and they go, I had this great idea, but you know what? I didn't do it because it's too hard. The system isn't there to support me to be successful as a digital health entrepreneur. So that's what motivates us every day. And so we created MedStack to try to remove their problems so that the healthcare industry could take these innovations that it needs and these entrepreneurs could be more successful with the market that needs the stuff they're building. And we asked them, what is stopping you from being successful? And they said there's a bunch of things stopping us from being successful. But the very first thing is infrastructure data privacy, which might not be what you'd expect. But we started peeling the onion and we realized why that is. Healthcare is based on a fundamental platform of you're there to help people. Do no harm. This is the Hippocratic Oath. But as soon as you take information and you make it digital, and as soon as that information is so sensitive and so private, what conditions do you have? What medication are you taking? What do you eat? How do you sleep? Where do you get help? Like, these are all really, really personal things. And as soon as that information goes into a place where it's risky, it's very dangerous. There is a statement that says that a health record in the US black market is worth 35 times that of a credit card. And so when people ask me, Balaji, you built a digital data security company platform. Yes, I did. Biggest company in Canada is RBC. Why are you not going after financial services? That's why. Because there's a lot of people trying to protect financial data, but health data is actually much more sensitive. And then Cambridge Analytica happens. And then the breach of Under Armour happens. And then, you know, and the list goes on. 2 weeks ago, there was a class action lawsuit to a health system in the U.S. for a HIPAA violation to the tune of $4 million. Or $40 million. I think I might be stating that wrong. This stuff is so scary that what ends up happening is the hospitals and the insurance companies and clinic networks and health systems become really scared about them not being in control of their responsibility to protect the patients within the organization. And so they say, if you're building a solution that's dealing with my patients' data and I don't know how you've handled security, I can't take your solution. No matter how much I like what you've done, no matter the work you've done in AI, no matter the work you've done in UI, no matter the work you've done in patient workflows, I can't take it. And so they say no. They say no to everything. And there's this war between the head of innovation and the head of IT security and the head of privacy where they can't seem to collaborate on accelerating the pace of innovation, even if it's developed internally. And so we said, that's the problem we're going to solve. We're going to take the healthcare privacy laws that govern how these healthcare enterprises work. We're going to codify them into a set of technical protocols. We're going to prove that the protocols make sure you're meeting the laws. And we're going to give these protocols to developers of apps. So when they go sell to a hospital, they can say, look, here's the proof that we're actually meeting all the security standards, not only that you want, but you yourself are beholden to by the legislation. And so MedStack is a cloud hosting platform with built-in configuration of data security, everything from encryption to backups to auto logging and network security and more, that prove that the data is being protected. Data is protected. We manage who's got access to it, when they got access to it, and what do we do if there's a breach. And it's all documented, and every one of our customers then follows the same set of privacy policies, which then get given to the customers they sell to.
So, in a nutshell, it is a platform which allows developers to create a system where they can store patient data.
It's a system that allows developers to build applications that store patient data in the way that they are expected to store patient data.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. But aren't there already applications for storing patient data? currently in the healthcare marketplace?
Well, I guess you need to kind of define what you mean by storing patient data. So again, there is the central data store, which is the electronic medical record system. But that system just takes manual inputs based on things that happen inside the hospital. Each of these applications that are being created, they never start with the data store. They always start with the user experience. How am I going to get data from the medical device? How am I going to get the patient to enter information? How am I going to develop insights on the information that exists? Oh, but in doing that, I guess I have to have a data store. Now, you can't just do operations on top of the data store inside the EMR, because the EMR is usually on-premise inside the hospital. And this is the other fallacy we've discovered about healthcare IT, is when we created this company, the other reaction we got was, wait a minute. Everything on healthcare is on-premise, right? Well, is it? And we dug into it. And what we realized was happening was, because of this concern around data privacy and security, the biggest area of focus and the biggest burden for management, which is the EMR, IT then says, it better be on-premise so we can manage the whole thing. But then if you ask them to manage all of these one-off little applications that do only one thing for one tiny department in one part of the hospital on the same IT infrastructure, they go, we don't have resources for that. That's not what we're paid to do. So they're actually fine with it being on the cloud, as long as it meets their expectations for privacy and security. But because everything else is on-premise, everybody else inside the hospital thinks that IT will only ever accept things that are on-premise. So there's this telephone game that's happened that's caused a dissonance in the industry. And I think it's about to break. People are starting to realize it now. But all the cloud providers, and to be clear, MedStack runs on top of them, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Rackspace, IBM, every one of them has healthcare as a priority to penetrate. Not saying they've done it, and not saying they're being successful because of all things we're talking about. But it's a great area of interest because there's a lot of data. The industry is not going away anywhere, and it needs to move to the cloud. And so to a degree, we enable that to happen. So we're not talking about the EMR being hosted on MedStack. I mean, I love that, but it's nothing that I am fantasizing about right now. We're talking about these applications that have to develop process data that then gets synchronized with the EMR. And of course, the large population of health applications that actually don't deal with hospitals. So things like, you know, we've got a great company out in the East Coast of Canada that allows people to refill and coordinate prescriptions with the pharmacy. Right? It has nothing to do with the hospital. They're running on MedStack right now. The data still has to be secure because what medications you are taking is highly sensitive information. So if we reframe your question, is there a platform for application developers to host health data in the cloud if they are a small individual developer, or I should say a small company developing a specific application? The answer is yes, there is, and that's MedStack. That's what we do.
That's MedStack. So recently you had a very successful fundraising round.
Yes, we did.
I believe you raised 2.4 million?
2.4 million Canadian.
2.4 yeah. million Canadian. And it was interesting to see. I think TELUS Health is one of your backers.
TELUS Ventures led the round, yes.
TELUS Ventures led the round.
Yeah.
So, yeah, tell us about this fundraising round. Like, how long did it take? How many backers do you have? Mm-hmm. And what will you use the financing for?
Sure, yeah. So we're pretty excited about this news. And like, as is usually the case with most of these fundraising rounds, it was actually done, you know, a couple months ago, but the process by which I could actually announce it took a little bit of time. I'm glad to be able to talk about it publicly right now. These things all have different kind of definitions. We're calling it our seed round. It's not the first financing we've taken in the company, but we did a number of very small little pieces of financing and convertible notes that led up to this round, primarily through the different accelerator programs that we were in. So we'd raised about 700,000 leading up to this, and then this is 2.4 million on top. the round, it was led by TELUS, supported by two prominent Canadian VCs that we really like a lot, Scale Up Ventures, and Panache Ventures, which has roots back into the old 500 Startups gang. And then on OCE supported the round as well as an extension, which is why it was oversubscribed. And we actually have one more who's coming in as well. So really interesting portfolio. And the name probably worth talking about most is TELUS and why TELUS. And, you know, it's interesting because people outside of healthcare might be really surprised by seeing that name on there. But what many don't realize is TELUS is actually Canada's biggest digital health company by a very wide margin, because they're well known as being a telecom. That's their core function, is providing, you know, mobile and then some home internet and home phone service. But they also have an entire arm of their company dedicated to healthcare technology, which is really electronic medical records for primary care, clinics mainly. You know, so you can think of like the big hospital systems, which are primarily U.S. companies, is Epic, Cerner, Meditech. And then there's this whole other ecosystem of EMRs that for general practice, as well as EMRs actually for specific areas of medicine, specific types of specialists. And TELUS has become a very big name on this. I don't want to speak for them, but there's a perspective I have on this. So when we first started talking to them, you know, they we'd had a relationship with them before because they have a really interesting mentorship program called First Step that they're loosely related to. First Step allows digital health companies to talk about their market assumptions and their thesis, and to get the feedback of people who worked in the space a long time, namely people who work at TELUS. Not to say you must do these things, but here are things you might want to consider. And it's really just a free information exchange that leads to a database of all of these insights, and as well, we hope, more successful companies. So we were invited to participate. It was a fantastic couple of days. And that kicked off a relationship with TELUS, both on the health side and the venture side. You know, when we first started talking to them, I had this conversation with my team, and I said, well, this is going to be interesting. We all have opinions on them. I mean, I think there's current discourse right now around the three big telecom providers in Canada and how people feel about them and the service they provide, et cetera. But I kind of know how they think. And the reason I know how they think is because I worked at BlackBerry for 8 years. And so that allowed me to develop, perhaps this is unfair, you know, severe market segmentation, but it allowed me to develop some insights into what motivates a company in this industry. And I didn't say it as anything negative. You know, I think telecoms are in a really interesting place right now around the world. And you know, I still look at the industry with a lot of fascination. And if you look at everything from, you know, stuff happening in the US with Apple's relationship with AT&T and Verizon buying Yahoo, and then similar things that are happening all around the world, everybody's trying to figure out what the next big business is, because simply being the provider of infrastructure, which you take for granted because everything is connected all the time everywhere, and then a source for people to make support calls into when they're usually complaining about being unhappy with their bill or whatever, what have you, that's got a limited shelf life in terms of what a business is, as critical as it is to modern society. But what is the next thing? And TELUS, you know, I think they've got a really forward-looking way on this. And I don't mean just in comparison to their major competitors in Canada. I think even on the global stage, this is a company to watch. They believe healthcare is one of the next big things that they have a responsibility to solving. What is the relationship? They have an infrastructure in place. And per the conversation we had earlier in this session, healthcare has to go digital. Healthcare has to go to the cloud, or else we cannot deliver care that we need to society. Well, if they already have an infrastructure in place, what happens if they optimize it for this industry that's coming that can't help but arrive? And so, you know, they have really ambitious plans to take advantage of the assets that they already have versus any other company in digital health, and build a superhighway for health data specifically. So that's where sort of TELUS Health came from. And the Ventures team, while they've done a number of different things in some really interesting areas, everything from like IoT to smart agriculture and transport and a few others, healthcare has always been a big priority for them. So they approached us. And you know, we started talking to them and said, well, what's your interest? And they said...
TELUS approached you.
Well, yeah, they approached us because we had a relationship already, and they said, would you be interested in speaking to our Ventures team? So, okay. You know, the diligence still had to happen. Mm-hmm. But that's how it got kicked off. And you know, it was up to us to make sure we're the right fit, to prove that we're the right fit for their portfolio. And we looked at their kind of history of investing in solutions in healthcare, you know, be it an AI solution or a telemedicine solution or what have you. And they were all around features that would then get sort of placed next to their EMR offering and taken to the market. And we said, well, we're kind of different than that. You know, what is your area of interest? In fact, some might actually think we're competitors. And they responded and said, well, the truth is, we believe that a more engaged, more useful digital health ecosystem is good for everybody. And of course, that services their bottom line as well. But the right ecosystem is going to come from a more rapid pace of innovation, which is all these people building these really interesting things. We want them to be successful. We tried to do it. They built something called the TELUS Health Exchange, which is still in its infancy. But they said the places we want to take the THX are very much aligned with some of the things you guys are doing already. And we think we can also bring to you the experience we have and the reach we have across the healthcare delivery ecosystem in Canada. Refer, for example, to their acquisition of Medisys, this network of clinics in Western Canada, one of the biggest venture deals in healthcare, really anywhere. And so what would happen if we told your ecosystem of app developers, we can help you guys get easier access to the internals of the TELUS Health software architecture that's in place in the different healthcare institutions they're selling to, and we can help promote the ecosystem to the doctors and clinics and networks that we're actually working with. In exchange, you help make the TELUS offering better by integrating our platform with this network of applications that you can help onboard. And we're both telling a better story for data privacy. That was their interest, and that's really where it came from. So the relationship has been amazing. In fact, today was our first board meeting. We're really, really happy with the team over there and the potential of what we're going to do. Really smart people who fundamentally believe in our mission. And I won't say, you know, we agree on everything, but it's been really good, and I'm excited about what they're going to do for Canada, but as well, some things they're looking outside of our borders that they can help us out with as well. So,
mm-hmm. So you mentioned a bunch of backers or investors.
Yeah.
TELUS, OCE, and Scale Up.
Scale Up and Panache, yeah.
Did you actually go to them one by one, or was it like...
It was collaborative. TELUS helped us coordinate those conversations.
Okay.
I had contact with them already. OCE is a previous investor. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to put more money into the company, seeing the success we were, so we aligned their further investment with this round.
I know OCE has a lot of grant programs, but I didn't know they actually invest.
They do. So we took advantage of the grant as well when we first started up. We are a participant of the Smart Start program, which is a grant. And then they have a program called Market Readiness, which helps an Ontario startup sort of accelerate their business on the back of they've won other investment from other sources. And so the Ontario government's essentially matching it as an investor. So they have two levels of that. Market Readiness 1, which is 125 Canadian, and Market Readiness 2, which is 250. And the 250 is what we aligned into this round.
Mm-hmm. Are you able to disclose the equity you gave up for this particular combined amount?
I'd rather not. Let's just say that it was very fair. It's very fair.
Fair.
And everybody's very comfortable with it. It's enough that I trust my investors to give us good, frank, honest, active guidance. We're really excited about the board. Scale Up and Telus have joined our board. And the people on them, they really care about our business being successful. But not so much that it's not our business.
Mm. How was the due diligence process? Was it difficult, intense, draining?
It was really difficult. Not because the investors were difficult. It was difficult because it's just difficult. We, you know, it's funny because I've talked to people about this.
You're in a pre-revenue stage when you're doing this fundraising.
No, we had revenue.
Oh, you had revenue.
Yeah. Yeah, not a lot, but we have revenue. We're not profitable, but we have revenue.
Okay.
We got to revenue very quickly with MedStack. We kind of started with a very minimal product and took it to market and then just kind of manually massaged it for each customer to make it work and then automated more and more things as we got more customers. The fundraising was extremely complicated because of the nature of our business, which is building an ecosystem that's reliant on a series of other companies working with us. I don't know if we really had to do fundraising, but we strategically had to make sure we were aligned with our goals and with Telus' goals. And both parties were really frank. We just kind of said from the beginning, you know what, like, let's get the hard stuff out of the way before we even sign a term sheet. So we actually spent a long time before we even got to a term sheet. A long time. And a lot of back and forth. And it shows the commitment they put on this deal because they actually built an entire team to work with us to make sure that the deal was right for their business, fair for their business, and right for us. And then a lot of man hours went into it on both sides. Until we actually were ready, we signed the term sheet, and then we had a couple more steps to go. But probably the biggest headache had little to do with our new investors. And more to do with the fact that we had a very complicated cap table because we had a lot of convertible notes that were all of different instruments. They were all converting at the same time. And it was a real tricky game to look at the legal terms of every single one and align what the actual outlay of equity would be across 24 different parties, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what to watch out for if you're a new entrepreneur, that would be one I would talk about. You know, it was tough. It's weird. They say, like, hindsight's 20/20, right? Like, I just remember being in the middle of it going, oh, my God, this is so difficult. And now I look back and I'm going, did it really go that badly? It took a long time.
How long was it?
10 months.
10 months?
Yeah. It took a long time, but...
Wow.
But we were... Yeah, I mean, depends on where you measure it, but maybe the more intense process was something in the order of 6. But it was a lot of... everything was looked under a microscope. And I don't mean that in the sense of, oh, we want to get something done, but the investors are being just so hard-nosed about it. By us, too. We looked at everything really skeptically, really pragmatically, really unemotionally, and said, what is this? You know, what are the three things? What must we have? What can we give up on? And what do we need to dig into a little bit further?
So that's interesting that due diligence was happening from both sides.
It was absolutely happening from both sides.
Both sides.
You know, we didn't have any question to tell us if they were to come on board, and really they're the name to talk about because primarily the others followed suit. But we didn't look at it from the perspective of, oh, you know, can Telus fund us properly? Like, that was never an issue. If you're going to pick anybody in digital health to invest in Canada, it's not a bad name to have, and it adds a ton of validity to the company. It was more strategic. What do we want MedStack to be? And what do they want it to be? And are those things aligned? And you know, what are our personal goals? Simon and I have put a ton of personal, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into this company, and we have an absolutely incredible team that we're really proud of. We want to make sure they're happy to be working with us. And so we spent a lot of time looking at every single thing they asked for, from the words they used, how they'd be implemented, what they meant, what was written between the lines, who was involved, and asked very tough, frank questions. And they did the same of us. I won't lie, and I will tell you that, you know, a couple of times we almost fell off the cliff.
No way.
But everybody goes through that. You know, I'm glad we did. Like, if we didn't get that scary for all of us, it means we're not doing the right kind of diligence. So as a result, the partnership is very strong now because we weathered the storm together. So
what were some of the difficult negotiation points?
I don't think too surprising. I mean, first of all, they are, at the end of the day, they're a corporate investor. So corporate venture capital has this whole other kind of layer of complexity on it than really typical straight VC does. And so all of the things that come with that, like, you know, where is the intersection of the alignment of their objectives from being purely a revenue and return on equity based investor to a company that's looking to have some level of influence or control on assets that can help them in their business? That's one. But on top of that, you know, we looked at the history of the kinds of things they've done. There was definitely some questions over things they've done in the industry. We talked to people who were involved, both in positive and the negative, and satisfied ourselves that we knew how to take the right story forward. But the list of stuff is all stuff you'd expect. You know, the board, the equity, the valuation, the, you know, terms of liquidation, what does a future partnership look like, and what is the compensation for that partnership? It was all stuff like that.
And where are you investing the money?
Where are we investing the money? So, you know, the biggest story with MedStack right now is we've built a product that proves it has a need. We announced with our fundraising round that we've crossed 50 companies on the platform, which we're really excited about. It's up to me, that number would be much higher, but I'm still excited about it. So now the question is, how do we scale it? How do we get it so that it just goes to the next level in terms of like the celebratory wave of companies who want to work in healthcare? And the answer is this thing we announced in the fall called MedStack Control. MedStack Control is the next generation of MedStack, or MedStack version 2, if you will. It's the same underlying architecture on how data is protected, but instead of our customers telling us what frameworks they need to have to support their application, they can do it through a self-service user interface. Why is that important? For two reasons. The first is it allows more customers to come with very low overhead for both them and for us to onboard to MedStack. But the second is, as they grow and they need to iterate on their technology, everything from the number of servers to what the networking configurations look like to what the disk capacity is, what frameworks they're using, those changes start happening on a more rapid basis. And so they need to have access to be able to do those changes on their own. So it's actually delivering on something that our customers are asking for, which is more control, while still not emboldening them with the responsibility for privacy and security management of the data. That's still at a layer they can't touch, and it's still a layer controlled and guaranteed by us. And so we built MedStack Control last year. It's been in private beta for a couple of months now. With a few of our customers, we're getting some really awesome feedback on it. We want to accelerate it to market, and we're going to do some very, very big things around it. So the focus is on engineering, marketing investment, transformation of our sales team. We're now working with some larger customers that we're really excited about. We recently signed our biggest customer ever, which we're really happy about. And there's a few more that are in the pipeline that are even bigger. Some larger companies who are in market are now looking to MedStack to say, you can help us scale even though we're post-launch. So that's the focus. And the intent of all of this is to accelerate to a large enough collaborative ecosystem of digital health companies across North America that we can take the next phase of the company, which is take this industry and now help them sell. So how do we take the ecosystem of applications and go to the hospitals, insurance companies, public health organizations, clinic networks, accelerators, venture funds, and say, we have deal flow for you, essentially. Companies that have proven technologies doing really interesting space, we will help you as a healthcare provider deliver experiences across VR, AI, blockchain, mobile, and more to deliver better patient care. So right now, the focus of this year is growth.
So have you entered a profit stage yet?
We're not profitable yet, and it's because we're being ambitious. You know, this is not the time to slow down. So money's being spent on growing the team. We have 5 open roles right now that we're actively interviewing for.
Wow.
So we're very picky about who we bring on the team for a bunch of different reasons. But if you're interested, anybody's listening, please drop us a line. And we're building messages for ourselves as well as for our customers. We're actually trying to build a marketing pipeline for our customers through our platform. So there's money being spent sort of across the board, and we're being very careful about the way that we forecast these expenditures and talk about the ROI in them with our investors.
Wow, that's quite amazing. So you've built an amazing product. You complete an intense fundraising round, $2.4 million with a bunch of high-profile backers like TELUS and OCE and ScaleUp. And now you're growing your company, expanding your team, increasing your revenue, acquiring new customers. So it seems like 2019 is going to be a big year for MedStack.
I hope so.
Will you have more fundraising rounds in the future, or is this it?
You know, I'm glad to not have to think about it for a couple of months.
Couple of months?
That's, you know, it? As a CEO, you're always sort of thinking about it. And you know, I will say we've had amazing interest based on the announcement, which only happened last week, from other investors who said, I love the story. I like how you tell it. Having TELUS backing you is amazing. What a wonderful partnership. Let us know when you're ready for the next round, what that might look like and how I might be able to help you out. But I'm not thinking about it actively right now. Probably into the new year is when we'll be more serious in terms of architecting another round. Right now, I really want to spend my time on my team and on the technology and most importantly on my customers.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's amazing. Well, Balaji, it has been very nice speaking with you and learning about your amazing and elaborate experience. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much for having me. It was fun.
And your website is medstack.io?
Medstack.co.
.co.
Yes.
Perfect. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you want to learn more about MedStack, you can visit their website, medstack.co. And thank you so much for listening to Zonecast, and stay tuned for more episodes.